from San Diego.
Hello, my name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. And, how you doing, Henry? Good to see you. I'm very grateful to be here. I'm very grateful to be sober. My sobriety date's February the 5th of 2005. And, this is your chance to leave. See you later. But you might not like everything I have to say, but that's okay. I heard my first tape, and I didn't like everything I had to say. So, but I am grateful to be here. And why I'm here is because I have a duty and a purpose, and that's to carry the message to an alcoholic who still suffers. And maybe I'll be able to carry the message to an alcoholic who's been here a while and is upset with their life and confused. And maybe I might be able to carry a message to that person that that it doesn't have to be that way. That there is a purpose around here, and I know I have mine. Whether your purpose is my purpose, that's not for me to say. But maybe I could say something that might help you to understand, you know, maybe this thing will work for me too. You know, maybe I can also recover, and maybe I could be given the ability to help others. You know, and that's not anything that anyone could have given me. That's something I acquired after a long time of suffering and some labor, and my story is pretty simple. You know, I was actually born and raised in San Diego, and I was hospitalized in a mental institution for the first time when I was 7, and it was for some behavior stuff. I had this issue ever since I could remember, where I just didn't feel right. I felt very like abnormal, and I acted out for attention to get what I wanted, self-seeking motives. I acted very selfishly. I felt like the world revolved around me, and at certain times I still act that way. I like to think that those occurrences are less frequent. You know, at least I like to think that. But nevertheless, I'm here, and I've been sober continuously, and that wasn't the last time I was hospitalized in a institution. I was hospitalized another 4 times, and by the time I was 12, I finally found alcohol. And no amount of medication, no doctor, no therapy, no group therapy, no family therapy, you know, no nothing. Like some like very highly paid doctors sat in front of me and talk to me to try and find out what was wrong. And there was something in the back of my mind that thought, you know, this guy doesn't really know. He doesn't really know how it is because he hasn't experienced it. You know, I couldn't like verbally communicate that because I was very young, but I remember having the recollection like this guy doesn't really understand. And when I found alcohol, you know, I finally found something that understood. And it provided me with ease and comfort, and I triggered something in my body, and I wish it was more difficult than that. No, but it's not. I'm here because I have an allergy to alcohol. When I put alcohol into my body, I trigger a phenomenon of craving, and I cannot guarantee what will happen if I put alcohol into my body. That's pretty much what it is, you know. And if you can identify with that, that's a part of it. And I could tell you that the second part of it for me happened when I started going to jail. And the first time I was locked up was when I was 15, and it was because of some behavior problems. And you could say, same selfish, self-centered, you know, stuff, being very dishonest with people, taking stuff that I felt like I deserved and like the world owed me. And, and that wasn't the last time I was locked up. You know, I had this idea that if I just kind of like okey-doked it and did what they said for a little while, then they would lay off my back and then I'd be able to be at it again. You know, I had that idea in the back of my head but I couldn't even okey-doke it for as long as they wanted me to. I drank within 4 months and no one found out and I didn't tell anyone. And I was actually, at that time, I was taken away from my home and I was a ward of the state because I was found a threat to my family and the only safe place they could have had me was other than being locked up was in a group home and I was in a group home I was actually, it was actually just before an outpatient drug program, you know, I just went. It was like a normal day, and you know, no thought of drinking, nothing like that. You know, I was gonna okey-doke it, like I said, this kid came up to me, another patient, and he comes up to me and he says, "Hey man, I just stole this big bottle of Jack Daniels," and he pulls out his backpack and he pulls out this big fat square bottle, and I was like. And my head just went, yes, that's exactly what I need. And I was like about to walk into this, you know, this program, you know, no consequence, you know, the consequences and the horrors of the past, nothing kept me from doing it. And I went and I drank and I threw up. And it'd been a few months since I drank, so I threw up pretty quickly. And I was like, I need it back in me, so I drank some more. And I needed the ease and comfort. And it was about time, and I needed to run in there. And we walked in, and walking in the door, I'd realize what I had done. Usually he sits down, and he kind of has like a little group with us, but other times he'll go and put on like a videotape and go do paperwork. And I freaked out and I went to the bathroom and I swished my mouth out and I tried to cover it up as best I could, but I had already, you know, it was like, and I was feeling it, you know, and it started to feel really warm and good and not like the release, and it was like super great. And I went down and I sat down and I just put my head down. He came in, popped in a videotape and walked out. And I sat there and watched some movie and I didn't tell anyone about it. It was like, it's like I was able to will myself not to do it again for a period of time, and then it happened again, and it was still like within the time frame that the okey-doke time frame, you know, I just didn't even have it in me, but the year passed and I had drank a few times since, and it was like everyone was off my back, and I managed to cover it up, and I got as messed up as I wanted to, I was locked up in 3 weeks. I was locked up in 3 weeks, got out, and got the idea that it wasn't me; it was San Diego. You know, if I moved away, then people would be off my back and everything would be okay and I could do it how I wanted to. So I moved up to Northern California and I lived with my dad and I sat and we got loaded together for a few months and then CPS kind of caught on to what was going on because I was going to school messed up and they took me away. And I was sent back down. You know, it wasn't where I was at. It's like there's a saying that goes like, wherever you go, there you are. And wherever I went, there I was. And there was all my dishonest, all my selfish, all my self-seeking stuff. All that stuff came up and crept onto me, you know, and nothing I could, like, well, alcohol covered it up pretty well. You know, I could say, but nothing else would do it in. So, to kind of fast forward the tape a little bit, I was locked up a couple more times after that. and I turned 18 and finally went to county jail. And I bailed out that night, and I called my mom crying and convinced her, you know, and in the meantime, I had, like, acquired a girlfriend, and that relationship fell through. You know, I'm when I have to choose between another person and the bottle wins. If anything comes between me and the bottle, you will lose. It's just as simple as that. It's just that simple. You will lose. And you know, I while out on bail from being in county jail, I was arrested again with a higher charge, and the bail was too much for me to afford. And you know, 4 months and a broken jaw later, I was to explain that I you know, you can, just because you're locked up, it doesn't mean you can't get loaded. And I had this idea that I was the king of the world and I could talk however I wanted to whoever I want to, and somebody didn't think that was okay. So you know, I had worked, and one of the jobs that I had worked at was a hospital. I worked at a hospital in Hillcrest, and it was it's like a state hospital. You know, and when my jaw was broken, I ended up going to the same hospital that I worked at, but this time I wasn't an employee there. I was in a wheelchair and I was handcuffed, and I was in County Blues of San Diego Jail on my back, and there was a deputy standing next to me, and you know, when the Big Book talks about, like, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, it's talking about when drinking, you know, and I had done some things when drinking that were very demoralizing, but I was able to cover them up. But there, I didn't have access to a bottle. I was handcuffed to a wheelchair, and the demoralizing feeling I felt when I looked at all the people I had worked with and how they looked at me, just like with disgust, and you know, like no other words can explain that horror. And you know, I my time was coming up, and they took the wires off my jaw, and trust me, if you think, like, eating jail food's bad, try eating jail food through a straw, okay? that's really bad. But eventually they took the wires off my jaw, and they released me a few days later after that. My time had come, and coming out, I looked at my past and everything I had been through, and I had told myself that this time it wasn't going to happen like that. You know, this time I was going to do it right. And in 3 hours, I had a bottle, and I convinced myself somewhere in the course of 3 hours that this time it would be different, that this time I would be able to handle it like a normal person, and I wouldn't have the consequences that occurred all those other times. You know, what I, like, the Big Book goes on to talk about that, talks about, you know, I'm the jaywalker. I'm the guy that runs into oncoming traffic. You know, I'm not the guy that has somewhere in the back of his head that maybe this isn't a good idea. I'm the guy that totally, completely forgets all the past horrors, and you know, and I think that nothing's going to hurt me. And I run right into oncoming traffic. And I had absolutely no thought at all of any kind of consequence. And I had the bottle, and I drank it. And I told myself, you know what, as long as I didn't use drugs, I would be okay, because I need to pass a drug test. And that was very well out the window once I put that bottle in. You know, once I downed it, that was well out the window. And it was on for only a couple more weeks. You know, I wish my drunkalog was longer, but it's not. That was it. It was on for a couple more weeks, and this guy that I had met coming out of jail, he had given me his number, and I gave him a call because I had exhausted. My family pretty much told me that not to come around, and if I'd come around, then they'd call the police. And I called some friends of mine, and they were like, "Well, we can't really do anything for you." You know, I had pretty much burned every bridge that I had, and I called this guy, the stranger, And this guy said to me, "Why don't you come over? It's Super Bowl Sunday. You know, I'm having some buffalo wings." And it was my second day of sobriety. And it was February the 6th of 2005, Super Bowl Sunday. I couldn't tell you who was playing, but I could tell you that the buffalo wings were good because I was very hungry. I was very hungry. And he said, "Okay, so let me see what we're going to do with you." And he said, "Okay, we'll take you to the VOA." And I don't know if any of you like know anything about the VOA, but it's not a place that you go if you're doing well, you know. You're not on a good streak if you're going to the VOA, okay? So, but I went to the VOA, and I was a few days sober, and there was this guy that got up there, and he was the only one that didn't sound like the teacher from Charlie Brown. He was the only one. You know, and I had understood like two words of what he said, and I went up to him, and he looked cool, and he looked like halfway decent, and I went up to him, and when I had gotten out, they told me I needed to have a sponsor. I'm like, a sponsor, you know, and that I needed to go to all these AA meetings, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's what they said when I was in the VOA, that I need to go to these AA meetings, and I had this like desire to go. And I went to three AA meetings a day when I had no job. I went to three AA meetings a day. And when I couldn't get there, by someone giving me a ride, I rode my bike. I walked. I took the bus. I did whatever I could so that I can get there. Because when I was there, I felt like I was at home. But the problem was, is when I walked out of the meeting, I felt like all the stuff came back. You know, all the horror and all the stuff from the past, it all came back. And I felt the same way. And it's, what am I gonna like live in an AA meeting? You know? You know, but there's thank God I don't have to. And lucky for you all I don't have to. but I'll tell you what, you know, that thing that I'd felt in the AA meeting, I didn't know it then, and if you had told me that's what it was, I would have denied it. But it was the presence of God. You know, that's what was going on in the AA meeting. And pretty much what I was told was that I could have that presence with me always. And I didn't have to be in an AA meeting to be able to feel it. But there's some stuff I need to do. And I asked this guy to take me through the steps. And he did. And he worked with me. He read me the big book page for page, word for word. And that's the only way I know to sponsor. If you didn't go through the steps that way, you know, there's a line that Bill Wilson said a long time ago. It was, "I think that the newcomers are going to get the wrong idea if we hang the steps on the wall." Because what it says in the big book is that these are a summary of the steps. That the real steps are in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're in the first 164 pages, the preface, the foreword, the doctor's opinion as well. And that's what he read to me. He read to me every page. And I didn't understand a lot of stuff. I was one of those guys that I'd read a sentence and I'd read a paragraph and I'd have to reread it and reread it and reread it because my mind was so fried that I couldn't like remember anything that I read. My reading comprehension was shot. 3 years of sobriety, almost 3 years of sobriety, I took a GED test and I got 95% on the reading comprehension. 95%. And it's because by that time, I had started working with newcomers. It had been about a year and a half I had been reading the big book to newcomers. And I'll tell you what, if you read it over and over, you know, it'll teach you how to read. And I've seen it in other people. One of my roommates, actually, I see it in him. When he reads it from a meeting, I get to see it. And it's not only that, though, because if I just read a cookbook and I can't expect to eat if I only read it, you know, and it says in there that it's a textbook. And pretty much that's, my sponsor was one of those guys that you call like a big book thumper. You know, one of those guys that like would bring his big book to the meeting and like hold it up at the steering committee meeting and a bunch of the guys on the side would like hiss at him, you know. but he'd read out of the big book. You know, he was one of those guys that was very about a textbook is something that you study and something that you practice. You know, you can't read a cookbook and expect to eat. We have to do the recipe exactly how it says. If you use too much salt, then it's going to turn out wrong. You know, exactly how it says is the way he was. And he instilled that by reading it to me page by page. And pretty much I made a beginning, and so did some past AA members, and it talks about it in the big book. Some AA members made a beginning, and there was a certain AA member in chapter 3 that failed to enlarge his spiritual life, and he got drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. But I could tell you that that's not me, and I'm sorry, Badusha, but I'm still sober from my first meeting. But that's not me. I read it, and I can learn now. There's something that from having the presence of God, we're able to learn. I'm able to learn from my personal experiences, but I could also learn from other people's experiences. And that's why talking to another alcoholic is like something else. Because it's not like the doctor when I was in the mental institution, because I actually think that they know what they're talking about because they're talking about themselves. No, they're not talking. They're not theorizing or reading some kind of wordy book or trying to like shove it down my throat in some way or like some kind of a magic pill or something like that. Because what happens when the pills run out? You know, what happened when the pills ran out for me is that I was still there. There I was. You know, you know, I did the inventory. You know, it took a while. It took like he said, be done in 2 weeks. I took 2 months. You know, there was some part of me that didn't want to grasp the God thing, and that showed. You know, and that showed. And it took a very kind lady to stand up in front of me. And you know what? There's a saying that goes around in AA that men stick with the men and women stick with the women. But I'll tell you what, if it wasn't for some of the women that came up to me and did some hardcore big book thumping on me, that I would not be sober today. Thank you very much to the women in here. I really, really appreciate you for being here. You know, and a lot of women, you know, I've seen women come in and they get with a guy and they have to be away for a while because, you know, women have certain bodily functions that men don't have. And sometimes that makes them need to go away from AA meetings. But I thank you very much for being here. We need more big book thumpers here. Women big book thumpers. But, there was this woman who pretty much thumped the big book on me after a meeting. It got me back to go to she pretty much said, you know, why are you here? Why don't you just go fucking drink? Is what she said. You know, I'm really trying hard to watch my language, but that's what she said. Okay. That's what okay. She said, why don't you just go home and write your first three columns and then be back here at noon tomorrow. And I had been frequenting this 1 o'clock meeting, and I went there often, and I went back the next day and she wasn't there, and she showed up like right at one, and I went up to her after the meeting expecting to get a pat on the back, and she looked at it and she said, "That's nice. Now go do your part." And I just kind of was like, "No, it's like this chick is like talking this way to me still." And I was ready to get one of those like frothy, you know, "Oh, good job, you know, you're doing well, you know, like I'll love you till you love yourself" kind of deal. But she was her kind of love wasn't like that. Her kind of love was you know what, I think you're going to die if you don't do this stuff. So the only thing that they haven't tried is telling you to go home and just do it. And so I went and did my part, and slowly finished the four-step, and I was very afraid. I was very afraid to read that to someone. You know, there was stuff I wrote on there that I swore I would never tell anyone. And I told that stuff to him, but I kind of looked like this. You know, I can't believe I'm telling you this right now, but I like read it to him anyway, and afterward he didn't really say much, but afterward I went home and I slept well that night. I slept very well, and I can remember in detox like being the dude that was up at night watching TV, you know, because I couldn't sleep, but I slept very well, And that's still part of the beginning. And I went along and I did 6 and 7 and went on to 8. And I had my list. I had made it. I added a couple names that I didn't feel resentment over. And went on to 9, started making some amends. And I'll tell you that one of my amends, people talk about being not willing to make their amends. I wasn't willing to make some of my amends, but I made them anyway. I made them because at that point I felt like my life had depended on it. One of them was my oldest brother, and I called my sponsor. I was sitting in my car. The truck I had earned through being in AA and doing the stuff you guys told me to, talking on the cell phone that I had got from being in AA and doing what you guys told me to. And I was sitting in front of the house, and I was on it, and he was saying, "Well, God either is or he isn't. What's your choice to be?" And he's like, go in there and talk to him, or leave. So I went in and I talked to him, and pretty much when I made amends, they were very simple. Some of them were much like, just keep doing what you're doing. And I don't know if anyone talks about like completing amends, but I don't know how you can complete that, or how you can complete something like be a good uncle to your nephew, I don't know how I can complete that, but I can definitely do the best I can. But I don't ride a nightly inventory. It doesn't say to do that. My spot check inventory, sometimes I get this idea in my head, like, they were more to blame than me. And they accumulate over time. And I write a list of people whom I feel resentment. I've done a couple of them. And gone and make amends. And working with others. Can't stress the prayer and meditation. I didn't really start meditating until I was about 3. And so it's been like a year, maybe a little over a year, I've been meditating. And some of the meditation, some of the answers from the meditation don't come when I'm meditating or when I want them to. They come in like the middle of the day when I'm at work or something. A drive comes to me to do something that sometimes I don't really want to do. And I can't explain what that is. But I can tell you that I've developed the sixth sense that it talks about in here. That's why I can believe this happened, that God speaks to me throughout like my time, and it's not like a voice. It's different, It's I hope I don't sound crazy. Wait till I try and tell you about what my God is, then you'll really think I'm crazy. But I'll tell you what, my God's very personal to me. So is my sex ideal. And those are the two things that I don't believe that anyone should really share from a podium. But that's like my personal opinion, because everyone's got their own personal beliefs on what that is. And I don't think I have the right to deprive anyone from their personal experience. So go on and I think that some of the real work happened when I was reading the book to somebody else, and the unselfishness that I felt when I was able to give something, that I never had to somebody else. When I was able to give something that was so freely given to me. And Dr. Bob's got a story in there, and he talks about a few reasons why he does it. One of them says because it's a pleasure. Another says another reasons are it's because it's a sense of duty. And another reason is to pay the guy back that so freely gave it to me. And the last one is because every time I do it, it takes just that much more insurance out from the next drink. Just that much more insurance. I'm one of those guys that at certain times in my sobriety, I was able to give nearly all my time to the work. And I was able to juggle like numerous sponsees. And I'm one of those guys that thought to myself, because I'm so young, I'm not going to appeal to anyone. Because I felt like I didn't really have anything to offer anyone. I've had guys that were Muslim come up to me and say, will you work with me? And I had a guy that was like 35 years old come up to me and say, will you do the steps with me? And I've had women come up to me and say, will you do the steps with me? And I have a responsibility in Alcoholics Anonymous to never say no and never volunteer. That's what I was told when I was new, so I try and stick by that.
And then I went to the East Coast to attend, and I attended an AA meeting there, and they're all volunteer. So I was kind of like, oh man. And my buddy, a friend of mine, just moved here from out of town, and he loves to volunteer. So it's like, it's, you know, what I've discovered was that there's what it says in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that there's this misconstrued idea that the book, the steps, and the program are three different things. But I'm under the impression by my own personal experience that they're all the same. And you know, there's not really much more that I could say. I don't know how much longer that I have. But I really appreciate y'all being here and allowing me to share my experience. I hope that y'all can, if you're new, that you can get someone you could work with. And you can have it. I promise you. Thank you.